Welcome to the Speak Pact Podcast, where high-performing speakers and the producers who hire them merge to give you the insider secrets to the lucrative speaking industry. Antoniette Rose, your podcast host and celebrated speaker agent, unveils insider success strategies. Discover a nexus of thought leaders and bookers, maximizing your potential in each and every episode. Your ticket to ultimate speaking success begins right here. Catch the transformative insights waiting for you on the Speak Pact Podcast, hosted by the industry powerhouse herself, Antoniette Rose.
Welcome back to Speak Pact. Today we are going to dive in to the journey of an expert in her field to a on-demand, sought-after speaker. I'm very thrilled to dive into your journey with you. Welcome, Beate Chalette.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So first, let's start with a little bit about your expertise. What got you into the field that you're in? And tell us a little bit about the start of your career.
Yes, I'll be happy to, Antoniette. So I originally am from Germany. I come from the creative arts, so I'm a trained photographer. And my skill has always been around helping creative people land planes. So, you know, as a photography producer, photographer agent, and then eventually I had a stock photography syndication. It was all about getting people with big ideas together and then making sure that a couple of days later, this project was completed and clients would fly home with photos in their hand that they can put into magazines, books, or ads and hang tags and on bikinis and all kinds of things. And so I come from this from the perspective of really understanding on how do you take an idea, how do you take something that is so lofty and how do you literally land it in something? And naturally, I've always been better at the business side of it. So while I love creative, the creative arts and creatives and people that are not necessarily all that conforming and have wild ideas, but my skill really is to help them take these things and put them into business models, processes, systems, strategies, topics, so that they can go out and make a mark and don't sound like everybody else.
Okay. That must at times, just saying, because I am a creative and I know creatives, that must feel like herding cats in certain instances.
Sometimes it does, but because it is something that's so important to me, and I'm always amazed on that there is a general misunderstanding, Antoniette, that people think that creativity is like a job, because it is and it isn't. There have to be a number of factors in place for creativity to occur. And a lot of times, you know, we see that great pieces of art and music are created during unbelievable hardship, because that's when, you know, when the emotions run very high and there is a lot of feeling involved, and that is what creates that pressure to create something, because you're describing something that you're experiencing so vividly. For me personally, because I understand that process and I have a lot of trauma and abuse in my history, and my life is anything but a princess story. So for me, the relatability to these instances that are required to create these environments are very relatable. So I actually don't find it difficult at all.
That's wonderful. And well, being able to relate is key, right? If you really understand.
Yeah. Yes.
So you are an expert growth architect and you've risen really in that space. Tell me a little bit, us as a whole audience, about your work with Women's Code. What is that about?
Yes. So there's two pieces to my work. So number one, I was a single parent, an immigrant, And I had to figure out how to be a working mom in a country that's not my own. So I created something called the Women's Code, which after I sold my business for millions to Bill Gates, and they had given me an offer to work in the company, I realized on just the discrepancy between how men operate and how women operate. And I wanted to write a book about the Women's Code to help women really understand that we are not men, we cannot act like men, that we have to be women, and what that actually means to have a code for women, a women's code. Because women are, interestingly enough, still in this day and age, at each other's throat versus allowing each other to rise. There's still a scarcity thinking around what women seem to think that they're capable of. It gets better, but we are seeing an unprecedented onslaught on women's rights yet again in today's world, which I find absolutely insane that I'm fighting for the same thing today that I fought for, 30 years ago. But we have to recognize as women that unless we have a code amongst each other, we will never get to the big issues, which is full equality. And on whether somebody's already offended by me saying that word or not is beside the point. The point is equality does not mean the same. It means the equivalent. Mm-hmm. And unless men can give birth, which we know they can't, they have a contribution, but they don't. And we are at a higher percentage the primary caregivers of our children. We do need and require different environments, different help. And if we are raising the children that are going to run the world tomorrow, you better give us a little bit of help and leeway to do so, because it's, you know, it takes time, money, and energy to do so.
You're exactly right when you say that it's not a done battle, right? It's still going on. I see it as a speaker agent when I'm negotiating contracts. I've got to work a little harder for the same pay for women, and I still, it still takes me by surprise every single time. I still don't understand it. And I think that it's almost not intentional. I'm just hoping for the best. But for whatever reason, there's still that bit of inequality there. So I love the work that you're doing. And I also really love that you said, we need to link together. We need to link arms instead of looking at each other maybe as competition, but more in a camaraderie way. Quick story. I owned a bed and breakfast and a couple of retreat centers for a lot of years. Most bed and breakfast owners, the burnout rate is anywhere from 2 to 4 years. I had mine for almost 15. And the only reason why I quit is just because I was up to grandchild number, I don't know, it was over a dozen. And my mom was getting ill and I just, something had to give, right? But otherwise, I would still be doing it. I loved it so much. But what I noticed were, we had these association events we would go to every month. And those innkeepers who were just giving away their recipes and all their super secrets, right? Total transparency, total abundance mentality. They're the ones that really thrived and made it. And those who were like holding their information close to their chest and they wouldn't refer back and forth because of the fear of maybe losing a customer, they burnt out in 2 years, if sometimes not less. So I see that in all spectrums and certainly with women. Why not be a champion for one another? So powerful.
I love that you said that. And it takes really this conscious recognition that you just spoke about to say, look, it is not just us. It's really the law of reciprocity. Mm-hmm. is stepping into gratitude for what I have, believing in abundance, that there's enough for everybody out there. And if I don't believe that, then I'm not creating it for myself, then I'm always wondering if there's enough for me, which is why a lot of women get stuck in middle management if they're in a corporate profession, because they're afraid somebody wants what they have instead of saying like, take what I have. I'm not staying here anyway. I'm going to that next level. So there is a lot of truth to that. And, you know, and then I have the work that I do in the Growth Architect. And that was born out of a lot what we talked about, the creativity, to see that people just generally don't have such a sense or an ease to break down things into simple steps. Like, if I know where you need to go, I can spit out your 10-step plan in an hour if I need to, because that is how clear that is to me. Or if there's a business model, sometimes people, and you probably know this, they're great podcast guests, but they're terrible at public speaking because they still haven't overcome their fear of public speaking in front of an audience. But put them on a podcast and it's like a completely different person. So you have to put people also where they're really good at. And so that's what we do in the Growth Architect. We build business models, then we figure out how to grow them and then scale them so you can make yourself obsolete and have potentially your exit plan.
Ooh, brilliant. And so, so, so needed. So tell me how you took that. You utilized your voice. So you took visionaries and leaders with strategies that grow. This is on your, in your bio.
Yes, please.
Your authority so that they can scale and their impact, which you just said. You bootstrapped your passion for photography, really interestingly, into a global business that you, which is the business you referred to, that you sold to Bill Gates for a good payday.
A couple of millions, yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you wind up and what prompted you to take all of that accomplishment to the stage?
You know, this is really a great segue to approach it the way you just did that. I think that we always think that when we build our businesses, our career, there's always somebody who says, you need to niche down. And the problem is the more you know, the less likely you are to niche it down because you know a lot and you have all this experience. So it becomes this conflict. What I have found, if I take everything I know, because I don't want to dumb myself down, I want to elevate myself as I progress in my career, that I know the little things, but I know how the things connect. And so you have to learn, you know, as you go out as a speaker or as you put these programs together, what's the 30,000 foot idea and where are the airports you can land it at? So sometimes people need to go to 30,000 feet. So when I spoke at Johnson & Johnson to their COVID-19 team, when they were in the middle of finding the vaccine, it was about taking them to 30,000 feet and saying, you have everything you need. You have the best technology. You're the smartest people. You're a global team all over the world. You have exactly what you need. It's game on. That was a 30,000 foot talk. And then there is the talk where somebody says, take us briefly to 30,000. So we see what the big picture is, but we're really struggling with this part. So you need to make sure that in your architecture, in your growth architecture of what you're doing, that you take your experience and you reverse engineer that on what do other people struggle with that I can solve with the knowledge that I have. Number one is, what's the big picture? People struggle with that. So you could solve the big picture. Number two, implementation. How do I land the plane? Well, what's the talk for that? Or what's the podcast interview for that? Or overcoming adversity. You know, but again, with the big picture and the landing the plane. So now when you structure your talk, or your speaking engagement, or your business structure along the way, you say, I've taken my experience, I put it in a loaf of bread, I baked it, I've taken a bread knife, I cut it into slices. What are the slices? Here's the loaf of bread, but here are the slices. Butter, jam, cheese, garlic, breakfast, lunch, dinner. So now you can offer the whole thing, but one slice at a time. That's growth architecture.
Brilliant and brilliantly put to the table, right? It's a very complex concept, and you just made it so tangible. And those just big picture implementation, overcome adversity, right? We know that so many companies, but also individuals building companies, get stopped at one of those three areas. And I love that you not only bring that to those that you work with, but also to stages. So how did you, tell us a little bit about your first few engagements. How'd you get them? Were you approached or were you seeking them? And how did you learn how to ask for the pay that you wanted?
Yeah. So the way it always goes back to the same thing is like, what do you want to talk about and what are you really passionate about? What do you know? There are, you know, there's a lot of speaking training out there and a lot of it is frankly not very good. I think the one time where I had audiences walk out is when I followed somebody else's formula. And this particular person said, you got to structure their talk like this, like this, like this, like this, like this. And you follow that. And I did. And I was so uncomfortable. And it was so out of the ordinary for me that people literally got up and walked out. That was the worst talk I've ever given. And it was a NASDAQ, no less. I mean, it was a disaster. But what I have learned is like when you think about going out, you want to go into where you're passionate and what actually interests you. I've spoken at Merck Pharmaceuticals. I've spoken at Johnson & Johnson. And I'm not a pharmaceutical expert. But what I'm an expert at is to, you know, really motivate people and to look at teams from this creative aspect that I understand. Because I, better than anybody, because I had all these crazy creatives that were coming together for a short period of time that had to produce in what days, something that would then last for another 6 months or a year. So the pressure was on. Because I have that experience, I was able to channel that experience into look at team building from a different perspective. Not just like, here's the job, how do we get the job done? But how would somebody like that approach that? So that was my differentiation factor. So you must look at the pieces that you typically apologize for. And what I could have done is I could have said, well, I'm not really coming from the professional speaking. I'm really coming from the creative arts. So I should really be speaking about things that people commonly assume, but I didn't. Mm. I said, I'm taking the concepts that I've learned in the creative industry that allow me to work for companies like Wrangler, Mercedes-Benz, Levi Strauss. And I'm going to bring the concepts on how to take the most non-conforming creative people in the world in a few days under one umbrella to produce something. I'm going to show you how to do that. Would you like to know that? Now I've taken this whole idea, I see you're smiling, and I just gave it the punchline. So add to it to your piece, because I think you have a different perspective, an additional perspective as a speaker agent on what would you say to your audience now.
This is brilliant. And you figured this out pretty much, I'm sure, on your own and through trial and error. And really it takes you getting out of the way, right? You and all the coaches you followed along the way, out of the way and listening really to what they need and how you're going to move the needle for them, whether you have 45 minutes, an hour, a 3-day conference workshop, whatever it might be. If you move the dial in the room, you're going to be called back. And the only way that you can move that dial is to think more about them than you're thinking about yourself. And you figured that out. I mean, that's just really, really brilliant.
You know what? That's the biggest advice I always give everybody when people say, oh my gosh, I could never do what you do. You know, I'm too nervous. And I always say the same thing. The trick to not being nervous is very simple. Before you go on stage, you take 15 minutes before, you know, I literally stand there. I read the energy of the room and I meditate on this. I pray to find the right words for this particular audience. And I visualize dropping out of my head into my heart.
Wow.
So that I can speak from my heart and I can make it about them, then I cannot be nervous because it's not about me. If I have that visualization on how do I get out of my head into my heart to serve them, you can't be nervous.
That was so well spoken, Beate. And you know what? Can I borrow that?
Yeah, please, please, by all means. Yes.
I say that to my speakers, but you just put it so simply and so eloquently. And I do love, I mean, the worst thing you can do, I believe, one of the worst things that you can do as a speaker is show up right before your talk, exit right after your talk.
Oh, God. I'm so glad you said that. I think it's worth probably a couple more sentences. We as speakers, we are here to create an experience and a connection. Yes. If I can, I spend as much time there as I possibly can for many reasons. Before I go and I ask the audience, you know, and say, why are you here? What do you hope to get out of? So when I open my talk, I can say, just like I spoke with Antoinette earlier, when you said, you know, every year you drive for 15 hours just to be here. So that tells me that there's something about this event that's so powerful that moves the needle, and how privileged I am to participate in this. So you can bring in the audience so it doesn't feel like you're some schmuck who just shows up, gets a check and goes. And then afterward, you want to stay long enough for people that had an experience to share that experience, because you may have transformed someone's life. I just did a talk for a women's wellness conference, a women in leadership in wellness conference. And what I saw was this woman writing and writing and writing, and my conscious brain wants to go, my God, how rude is she? You know, she's not even paying attention to my talk. She's just sitting there and working or something. But then when we went into the share, she said, when you started speaking, it opened up something in me. And this idea I always had about doing my own business was just a free flow conscious stream. And I wrote a whole business plan in the 45 minutes you spoke.
Wow. That is amazing. Yes. That's sometimes all it takes, is just that spark that you have. And how sad, right? How really selfish on some levels. Us many, many high achieving women especially hold back their voice because, I don't know, they're a little overweight, or they're just not sure they have the charisma, whatever it might be, when just that one sentence can change the whole directory, the whole trajectory of somebody's life. And that woman who created this whole business plan, hopefully implemented it.
Let's hope so. Yeah. I don't know yet, but yes, to your point, that's why you don't do a blow and go. You want to stay, because when somebody has such a profound experience, you want to be there to hear that. Mm-hmm. And you want to be there to share that with them. And that is your validation as a speaker, that whatever it is that you do and how you talk, that makes an absolute impact on the audience.
Yes, and they feel it. They know it. I'm sure they feel the fact that you centered, you asked the greater wisdom, how can I best serve this audience? It shows. And I really love that when you are mingling with the audience, you're also really gathering data. People are telling you what really stuck with them, right? You may think it's this whole other amazing piece of content that you give, when they're really honing in on this little area that you just thought was just kind of a bridge, right, to another place. That is invaluable data. There's, you know, Fortune 500s have spent a lot of money just trying to get that feedback back. You are leaving so much on the table when you separate yourself from your audience.
Yes, and it also allows you to test concepts. because you then can go around and say, well, out of the, you know, people say, well, wow, I really enjoyed your talk. Then you say, what's the one thing that resonated with you the most? And then people will tell you what resonated with them the most. And some people are going to be uncomfortable talking about that. And that's okay too, because you also need to know if your talk lands for everybody, it's probably not a good enough talk. It needs to create a little bit of discomfort and thought leadership. That's what we're here for. We're not here to just make people feel good. We're here to wake people up and to make them think and for people that are there to have their lives changed or motivated, to give them that little bit. I mean, I don't necessarily shy away from a controversy either. And on the last talk, I have a new concept that I've created, and I just put the concept up on a slide. And I said, well, if you read that, what resonates with you? And it was like you could hear a pin drop in the room. And I'm like, oh, if that's the response I'm getting for this concept, I'm going to be working on this.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, Beatra, if you will take us back to those first significant talks. So when I say significant, you knew, okay, I've got something here. Audiences are responding to me in a favorable way. Number one, how did you decide? So there's two ways to monetize the microphone, right? That's from the host check and it's from the audience check. Do you blend both? Whether or not you're selling from the stage, you're selling a concept that people then come and seek you out for. Or how did you start off? How did you monetize it starting off?
There's different ways to do that, and it depends on where you go. So there is a women's conference. So I'm a certified woman business owner, a VB. And they don't pay you, but when you speak, you can make an offer. I have found that it's increasingly difficult to make offers because a lot of the speakers that have done the perfecting the offer from stage, it's really 15 minutes of content and 45 minutes of selling. And I believe that for the most part, the audiences have gotten to be too smart for this. I do think you need to have an engagement piece available for those of the audience member that are willing to take it to the next level. You know, we have created a quiz called What's Your Talent Worth that we've designed a couple months ago. And you go to whatsyourtalentworth.com and it literally will tell you what your skill is worth in today's market, your earning potential. And that seems to be a phenomenal converting audiences because everybody wants to know what their talent is worth in this market. And then that's a conversation piece afterward where you say, well, the quiz is like 3 minutes and what's your number? And then somebody says, well, my number is like $700,000. And then you can say, well, is that what you're earning right now? And then they say, no. And you say, well, do you want to have a conversation about the discrepancy and why there is a discrepancy? So now you have an engagement piece. So you want to have something that's engaging like that, that's aligned with what you do for your business. And so that's one way to convert the audience. You must have something. It could be an ebook. It could be a report. It could be anything, but it has to solve a problem for the audience and it has to be relatively easy to do. We have not found that online courses that are like 16 hours long are very helpful. It has to be something short and quick, aligned with the experience or the expectation that your audience is having. Then you are having the paid speaking engagements. So sometimes I speak for free, and I speak for free because I want to either test a concept or I want to get in front of an audience, or I believe it's my target audience where I can potentially pick up clients in the future. That requires you to be very confident in and have identified clearly how you show up. This is one of the things that also often goes wrong where you think you are being perceived a particular way, but the audience perceives you a completely different way. How you're being perceived supersedes what you think of yourself. Always. They are always right. You're not. Mm. So One of the things is you need to make sure that how you want to show up or how you want to be perceived, that you hone that in so that that's really congruent, because it's like a painter who knows how to use a brush to get a particular effect. You need to have that same ability. Like when I ask my client, what do you want the audience to walk away with? And they say, I want them to be moved. Then it is my job to know how to do that. That's my skill set. If someone says, well, I want to give them something to think about, I want to motivate them, and I want to get a couple good laughs, it's my job to deliver that. That's what I do as a speaker. So you need to learn your craft and your subject matter so that you can take the audience kind of any way you want. Mm. Now, so we've covered non-paid speaking, which you do for very specific reasons, testing concepts, getting in front of the right audience, or because you can make an offer from stage, or because it's an honor to be there, like on a TED talk, let's say, or a TEDx talk. You do that just because it's an honor to be there and it's a credibility piece. You do paid speaking engagements because it gets you the name as a client on your resume, and because you cannot make an offer from stage. And then there's hybrids where you get paid a fee, which is not your usual fee, and you can, let's say, have book sales in the back of the room, which I'm always recommending. However, when you do a book sale, people will not go for a higher ticket item because they, for $15 or $20, can get your book, and then they're not going to be buying your $1,000 program. So you also have to be careful about how you do these kinds of engagement pieces. It has to be crafted. So how I get my speaking engagements is I am very active on social media. I make sure that my Google SEO is good, that I'm listed in some of the, you know, speaker bureaus, that I look for, you know, requests for speakers, that we submit, that we are participating in a couple of the websites, you know, where there are some of these speaking gigs that are posted. So we go at it from a number of different ways. And then when I speak, that's why I stay longer, because inevitably somebody hears me speak that then knows somebody who knows someone who needs a speaker. And I have had that time to connect with them for potentially a referral.
Yes, that's something we didn't mention earlier. That really is one of the best ways to get booked, again, is from an engagement, right? And you can miss out on that opportunity if you just kind of hightail it out of there. And to me, that's kind of a bit disrespectful to the hosts. Stay, partake, enjoy at least some of the event that they've worked so hard to put together and invited you to be part of. You said something earlier that I would love to touch on. You said so much in there. There was a lot of gold. I hope people are taking notes because there was a lot there. And that is the journey for the audience, right? The journey that you're creating for the audience. So when you get up and you talk for 45 minutes, 90 minutes, maybe a half a day, whatever it might be, it's still just the first date for a lot of those people in the audience. It's really just, who is Beatra Chalette? I love your name. Who is she? She's really kind of knocking my socks off today, but what is it about her? How can she help me reach my targets or my company targets? Right. And so they're just kind of checking you out and taking some notes and getting some gems. And hopefully you make a micro transformation within that short amount of time. I know that you do that. And that should be the goal, not to try to take them from zero to 20 in that one talk, but just begin the journey. It's the first date, right? And then I love how you said have something that supports that first step with you, right? It's the first step in your journey together. Give them a low barrier to entry gift of some type that helps further cement, further the message that you gave them during that time together. So brilliantly said. I'm going to go to whatsyourtalentworth.com and I'm going to take that.
As you should. And You know, again, I mean, in growth architecture, we always look at the psychology of the person that we're trying to reach. We have a product that we developed. It's like a $7 product. It's called Airtight Avatar. That's not just a customer profile, but it really understands the psychology of what, you know, of people. I think about when I look at my audience, not as the executive from Merck Pharmaceuticals. I look at it as a mother of three who has gone through unbelievable hardship and tenacity. And I think about what kind of person she must be to have three kids, be an executive at Merck Pharmaceuticals. That's who I'm speaking to, not the executive, the mother of three. So my relatability doesn't have to be around being an executive at Merck Pharmaceuticals. My relatability is about what it takes to become one and the journey and the recognition of people that are that dedicated to creating that. And when I did do this talk at Merck, I focused on remembering what you go into business for a company like this for in the first place. That's not that pharma makes a boatload of money by overcharging on prescriptions, but it is a sincere desire to be at a company that is developing cures for diseases that don't have cures yet. And that the team building will have to be around a company like that on remembering that each one of them really matters. Mm. That without the janitor who empties the trash can at the end of the day, the environment is not ready on the next day for you to come with a clean thinking slate. To be in an environment where you can create, we can really experience on what it's like to be the forefront of helping people all over the world. And when you break it down, and you know, I just did that for your audience, when you break it down in this remembering, that's right. That's why I took a job at a pharma company. Yeah, yes, and the money. But because my grandmother had cancer and there was nothing for that. And now I want to be somewhere where I can make a contribution to do that. I mean, can't even imagine how somebody must feel that's been participating in the development for the vaccine, on what power, what responsibility, what pressure that was, what kind of person that must be. You speak to that because that's what motivates people.
So you start with connection.
Always.
That's incredible. Yeah, not with an agenda, not with what does Beate, Gillette, it's such a gorgeous name. What do I bring to the table? Because I've accomplished so much, right? That is not what got you to become a sought-after speaker and a very well-paid speaker. What got you there was your ability to connect with your audience. And you've just dropped so many ways to do that in our short time together. Can you tell me, so it's easy to see how you became an authority in your industry. How did you turn, because I know you had some rough patches in there, how did you turn adversity into authority?
Yes. When I look back, so this is really the mindset that I recommend. When you look back at people that have made it, and you reverse engineer their path, the story does not go, she was a princess. Somebody handed her a whole bunch of really great stuff and gifts and pearls. And then one day somebody says, hey, do you want to be the queen? And you say, sure, why not? And then you got the crown. You lived happily ever after. Very, very rarely do you hear anybody who is made out of themselves that is the story. The story most of the time is it was bad. It got really worse. Bad childhood, abuse, trauma, whatever, whatever, whatever. Got even worse. Bankruptcy, didn't think I was going to make it, in debt, something, something, and then suddenly it turned. So you look at the stores and you have a sense of reality of you being trained. You're in training to become great. I cannot speak about resilience unless I know what resilience is. I cannot speak about success the way I speak about success unless I have success. I cannot tell people to hold on unless I held on, because that's a congruency issue. I believe you need to speak about what you know about, not the bullshit. And forgive me for saying this out loud, that other people tell you to speak about that is so bland that I'm yawning just thinking about this. You need to get deep into your heart and into your emotions and into what happened to you. And you need to measure on how what you're saying, how you're saying it, and what the teaching point of each one of these elements is. You know, as an example, I've just gotten back from an ayahuasca journey to really deal with some of the trauma, my childhood trauma. And I realized that my abuse was a lot worse than I remembered, probably for very good reason. Now, I knew there was abuse. My mother's still alive, so I will only share certain pieces of my abuse because that is what I'm comfortable with. And there's no reason to take this to particular places because, you know, she's 90 years old. She doesn't remember any of it anyway. But you got to get very clear about what it is that you're kind of going out with a message that yes. You're willing to share and why you're telling the story and what's in it for the audience. So I feel that we are in this overcoming of resilience. We are activated. I call this an activation by God, spirit, universe, whatever you want to call it. You cannot inspire an audience of 1,000 people unless you have something that is inspiring. And in order for you to have something inspiring, you must have had something you overcome that other people are experiencing now that you can give them hope for overcoming themselves. And when I talk about my story, how I got out of $135,000 in debt and then sold my business to millions to Bill Gates, you know, there's always this moment where there's a spontaneous applause because everybody, you know, claps for the heroine that has overcome these horrible stories and then finally is there. And I always say, it's not about me. The story is not about me. The story is about you now knowing someone who's done this. This is your excuse eradicator. You now no longer have an excuse. Because if I did that, what must be available for you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, which ties back to why when you were basically dancing to somebody else's dance, giving a presentation that wasn't authentically you, they saw right through it, right?
Right through
it. The connection piece was lost. All of that that you genuinely bring to the table, as terrible as things are, especially, you know, you don't want to see anyone suffer, especially children or young, you know, young people. But sometimes that's exactly what shapes us into the women that we become and into the influencers that we become. If you decide to own your own journey, when you relinquish that, mm-hmm. and dance to somebody else's dance, it doesn't take into account all of those things that brought you to where you are. And I always say to my speakers, speak from your scars, not from open wounds, right? And I love that.
Nicely put. I love that. That's so nicely put. Yes, from the scars, not the open wounds. Yes.
The fact that it's always going to be a journey. I love that you're still going out there and doing what you can for yourself to discover that next piece as you're ready to do whatever work you need to do there. And then the next piece. But before we close, there's a couple of things. One last question.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then I would like for you to let everybody know how to get a hold of you outside of the quiz or in addition to the quiz assessment. And then I have our signature question at the end. I don't want to gloss over this because it's so important. And I love that you brought it up. So when you go out onto a stage, people are reading you and they know from the get-go if you are templatized.
Right? You're just trying templatized.
To get it all right. and I've done it I've done it too, Beatra. I could have bought another house with the money I have spent on all the different high-end programs, right? Telling me this and that. And it really wasn't until I put it all aside, came back to my gut, and basically, what is it, Frank Sinatra? Did it my way. It's good to have consultants, have mentors and coaches. It's not good to throw away your gut, right? What you know you bring to the table. So we do work with our speakers on their keynotes, but it's more about branding. So they're not all over the place. They stay within a cadence, and they can get those micro wins in the time allotted. But it's like an accordion. Mm-hmm. It can expand and contract and flow with the audience so that you have that breathing room to connect with your audience. That's a decent framework. That's just making sure that you're not all over the place and a confused mind doesn't buy, whether it's a concept or reaching out for your next thing. But when somebody says, okay, you go on and within the first 5 minutes you do this and the second 5 minutes, that's red flags for me. I'm really glad that you brought that up.
Yes. I think that there's also a particular style about yourself. I mean, you don't want to overwhelm them with information either. You want to keep the concept simple. You want to focus on audience engagement. You want to ask questions. You want people to be engaged. You watch out on whether they pull the phones out or if 50 people go get up to the and yawning and going to the bathroom, then you really need to step it up. But the more honest you show up, and the more I do it, the less goes on my slides. I, you know, now sometimes have 3 words on a slide just because I don't need to impress them anymore. I have authority in my subject. I have subject matter expertise. I don't need all of this bravado anymore. And that is what gets the audience's attention. They know if somebody's really trying hard to impress them and trying to explain why they are there. You need to show up knowing that it's your table. You're not asking for a seat at the table. It's your table that they're coming to.
Mm. Yes. Oh, love that. And because you're connecting, you're also really increasing the probability that those audience members that resonate with you mm-hmm. are going to walk away with a win, and they will mm-hmm. never forget you. Like that woman who had a whole business plan. Maybe somebody doesn't get that much, but just the one thing that they can walk away from can just completely put them on a path to greater heights, right? And they will always attribute that mm-hmm. to you. So they'll definitely want to hitch themselves to your next thing and your next thing. So that's the beginning of the journey to the next date. And then the next date, maybe even get to kiss sometime.
Yes, truly.
So Beate, go ahead and let the audience know. I know there's going to be quite a few who want that next thing from you. What are some of the ways that they can find you, follow your work, and hear more?
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Antoinette. Well, number one, for all of you listening to this podcast, go wherever you pick up this podcast right now and give Antoinette a 5-star review and a comment. Comments are critical in the age of AI because AI looks for engagement. And share this episode with one other person who needs to hear what we talked about today, because podcasting is a labor of love. Give her some love back. So that's how we start. And the second thing is, you know, go to whatsyourtalentworth.com. Find out what your earning potential is in this market. It's a quiz. It's an actual mathematical calculation that I've created called the profit formula. And it'll spit out a number. The number is going to be most likely higher than what you're making right now. And then if there's a discrepancy between how much you could earn and how much you're earning right now, maybe it's time for you to schedule an uncovery session with me, and you go to uncoverysession.com and book a 15-minute session. Make sure you mention this episode so you get priority treatment for our conversation. And I'm available everywhere on social media. That's really the best ways. I have a podcast called The Business Growth Architect Show, where we talk about spirituality and strategy, because success lives at the intersection of both. If that's interesting, go and check out our podcast show. And other than that, the best way really is take the quiz, then talk to me, and then we'll see what we can do to help you to get to that next level, whatever that next level might be.
Wonderful. I'm going to be taking the quiz for sure. I love your work. It's brilliant. And all that you brought to the table today is worth a second listen. So for sure. Okay. So our signature parting question is, you know that this is Speak Pact, and it's really a whole work to link arms in a pact to impact in our expertise, our corner of the world, right? Our peace that we get. So can you leave our audience with some sort of mandate, some challenge on how to increase their impact?
Yes. I think the fastest way to do that is to detach from the notion of failure. When I talk about failure, I describe it like you going to your car and your car telling you you need to update your GPS, but you're busy, you don't. You have kids, soccer game, meetings, clients, grocery, mom, parents, whatever. And one day, there's a construction site where your shortcut used to be, and there's a guy in a neon suit with a hard hat holding up a stop sign. Now you get out of the car, you throw yourself on the ground, you throw a temper tantrum, you say things like, I'll never drive again, this is the dumbest thing ever, I'm such a lousy driver, this is absolutely useless, it's too expensive anyway, I'm going to sell my car, and these insurance companies, they're all robbers, says nobody ever. All you do is you give yourself a slight smack in the head, and you go, ha, should have updated my GPS, and you make a note, this is no longer a way that you can go, because now there's an on-ramp for a freeway. So you actually wave at the guy with a hard hat and the chic neon suit with the reflective stripe, and you find another way, knowing that the destination is still there. Now, if you keep that attitude in how you show up speaking, how you show up in your client acquisition, and how you show up in your follow-up, that every time something doesn't go right, I want you to visualize the man in the hard hat and the neon suit and just wave and say, this is not the way for me. I'm going to find another way. You're going to be much happier.
Oh, that's perfect end to an amazing interview. Detach yourself from the notion of failure. Ah, so good. Thank you, Beatrice. And Beatrice. Beata?
Beata, yes.
We need to hang out a little bit more so I can get that.
I'll be all up for that. Yes.
Shalette, you have been a joy. You've given my audience so much to think about and act upon. So thank you for being with us today. So appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ciao, ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the Speak Pact podcast. To become a recommended speaker of Antoniette's WPC speaker agency, or you are a host or planner looking for a dynamic expert in optimized performance, Antoniette would like to personally meet with you. Secure a time with her at speakerbooker.com. Again, that is speakerbooker.com. It all begins with a vision, a voice, and a pact to impact. Join the Speak Pact movement by joining our new private Facebook group at the link in our show notes. Find us on nearly every social media platform at One Antoniette. That's number 1, Antoniette, or simply hashtag SpeakPact.